Welcome to Tell Me About Your Pain. My name's Alan Gordon. I'm the director of the Pain Psychology Center. My co-host Alon is out of town this month, so we're going to be doing something a little different this episode. Today, I'm going to be talking to Dr. Howard Schubiner. Dr. Schubiner is one of the pioneers of mind-body medicine, and he's created a specific protocol to help patients figure out whether their pain is caused by their brains or whether it's due to a structural problem in their bodies. And figuring out the cause of your pain can be really important. Fear is the fuel for the pain. We've talked about that in past episodes. And it can be a lot harder to overcome the fear of the pain if you think there's something wrong with your body. In fact, if you listen to our last episode, as soon as Amber, our caller, was able to wrap her mind around the fact that her brain was causing her pain, the pain went away. So today I'm going to pick Howard's brain and see if he could help give you all some additional tools to help figure out the cause of your own pain. Before we dive in, I wanted to tell you all about a free event that our partners at Curable are doing on January 6th. It's an event to learn all about Curable Groups. Curable Groups is a 12-week, expertly designed healing boot camp. You'll get access to weekly video workshops with a supportive group of peers and guidance from some of the top chronic pain physicians, like Howard Schubiner. In fact, I'm going to ask Howard a little bit about the groups later on in the podcast. Curable's also giving away a free printable New Year, New You 30-Day Healing Challenge workbook to everyone who attends. So even if you decide not to sign up for a group, it'll still be worth your time. Again, that's happening on January 6th. You can learn more and RSVP at curablegroups.com. Hi, Howard.
Hey, Alan. Good to hear from you. How are you?
Good. So for those of you who don't know, Howard Schubiner is one of the leading physicians in the mind-body field of pain. He has pioneered an approach for helping patients to determine whether or not their pain is neuroplastic or caused by the brain, or whether it's structural, which is caused by the body. You know, Howard, one of the things that I found is that one of the biggest barriers for people to overcome their pain is this idea that, is the pain actually coming from my brain, or is there something structurally wrong with my body? Have you found that to be a barrier as well?
It is a huge issue, and every patient comes in with that. Every patient is so concerned that they've been damaged, and you know, pain makes you feel that you're damaged, obviously. But in addition, doctors have often told them how damaged they are, and those words really stick in their mind.
Yeah, you know, I found that two of the main reasons why it's hard for people to believe that their pain is caused by their brain is, on one hand, we're evolutionarily wired to associate pain with injury. So it just feels in our bones like there's something wrong with us. But then on the flip side, or additionally, they're told by all these practitioners, you have like disc degeneration or a herniation, or, you know, there's something wrong with your spine or your neck or your nerves. And so it's like extra hard.
Yeah, it really is. And doctors are usually not telling people that all people, whether they have back pain or not, have disc degeneration, that all people have bulging discs, whether they have pain or not. I saw a guy this week, and the doctor, he had a back injury, mild injury, and went to the doctor. And a week later, he came back, and the doctor said, well, you know, it'll probably get better, but maybe it won't. And those words just stuck in his mind. Maybe it won't get better. And this is 10 years later, that, you know, he's been having pain.
You know, when I had really bad back pain, I saw a lot of different physicians and physical therapists and chiropractors. And I remember there was a physical therapist. She was like the head of physical therapy at a really, you know, prestigious facility. And she looked at my MRI slides and she said, oh my goodness, did you like fall off a third story balcony or something? It was terrifying to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. And frankly, it just makes me mad. It makes me really mad that the data that we're referring to, of that most people have abnormalities on their MRIs without pain, is not new. It's been around since the 90s.
Yeah. It's just not so widely known yet. And so, you know, that's one of the things I thought that you could potentially help our listeners with today is whether someone has back pain or neck pain or headaches or mouth pain, if they're diagnosed with trigeminal neuralgia or herniated discs, what guidelines do you think you would be able to help provide so that people can make that determination on their own?
Yeah, I think most of the time people actually can do that. First of all, have they been diagnosed with a specific diagnosis, which is a neural circuit disorder, such as fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome?
And just to interject for a sec, for those of you listening, Howard referred to it as neural circuit pain. Howard and I both used to refer to this condition as neural pathway pain, and then Howard started calling it neural circuit pain, and I started referring to it as neuroplastic pain. And when the Boulder study comes out, it's going to be referred to as centralized pain. So we like to keep things simple.
Right, exactly.
They're all different names for the same syndrome. So I just want to make sure that if you're listening to this, you're not confused. Neuroplastic pain, neural circuit pain, centralized pain, it's all different names for the same thing. Anyways, go ahead, Howard.
Exactly. So if someone has been given a specific diagnosis that by its definition precludes having a structural problem, then it's neural circuit pain right there, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, tension headaches, migraine headaches, interstitial cystitis, POTS, burning mouth syndrome, small fiber neuropathy. There's a whole bunch of these. For example, say you have tooth pain and you go to the dentist and you go to five dentists and they can't find anything. Well, you know, if they've ruled out a disease problem by looking and not finding it, then by definition, that's going to be a neuroplastic problem.
So it sounds like you're saying two different things. First, it's saying that if they're given a diagnosis that is you kind of look at as not really having any structural foundation like fibromyalgia or tension headaches, like you said, that's kind of a given. And another thing is that if they see doctors who aren't even familiar with this approach, with the neuroplastic component to pain, yet these doctors aren't able to find that there's anything wrong with them, that's another one right there.
Yes, exactly. Those are two separate points. And both of those points are in what I call the rule out phase of this assessment. The rule out phase is ruling out the structural problem.
Got it.
The third part of the ruling out phase is when you find abnormalities on an MRI or an X-ray that are what Dr. Sarno used to call normal abnormalities, as we talked about a minute ago, degenerative discs, bulging discs, small things that are commonly seen in people who don't have pain at all. That is another point that helps to rule out a structural problem because you didn't find a tumor, a fracture, an infection, something clearly identifiable that would be structural in nature.
And you know what's really interesting is if you go to enough doctors, you'll find one who's able to find something. And I thought that this was really interesting that in the Boulder back pain study, the majority of the patients had previously been to physicians, and there were only two who were told, we can't find anything wrong with you. The others, every single one of them was given some sort of diagnosis. So I think most people probably fall in that third group where they are given a diagnosis. Doctors have been able to find something that they are indicating is responsible for the pain. Have you found that to be the case too?
It's completely true for people with back and neck pain and musculoskeletal type pains. But for the first category we talked about, you know, the fibromyalgia, irritable bowel, headaches, pelvic pain, those syndromes, you know, they're not, I mean, they're being told they have this diagnosis, but the diagnosis precludes a disorder.
So you're talking about, you know, the rule out. So you want to make sure that any structural findings are not meaningful, that they're incidental. And that's something that, which by the way is not nothing. You know, we've seen patients in the Boulder back pain study who had horrific findings where, you know, a 10 millimeter disc herniation with nerve root compression, and it ended up being neuroplastic pain. So just because you have structural findings, it doesn't necessarily mean, this is structurally caused pain. most structural findings are incidental and not the cause of pain. Would you agree with that?
The vast majority of people who have chronic pain do not have a structural problem. This is a fact. Because the vast majority of people in this country who have chronic pain have neck or back pain. That's about almost 50%. And in that population, the studies that we've done and ongoing studies we're doing now are showing that between 85 and 95% of those people with chronic neck and back pain do not have a structural disorder to explain the pain when you look at it closely. I mean, that's an amazing finding.
Yeah, that is. So, you know, a lot of people are feeling like, oh, what's the actual percentage? And you're finding that it's as high as 95% of people with some of these chronic pain conditions. It's not a structural issue.
Right. Well, with the headaches and the fibromyalgia and the irritable bowel and the pelvic pain, it's in the 95%+ area. With the back pain, it's probably a little less, but it's still at least in the 85 to 95% range. So it's still incredibly high.
Got it. So outside of the whole ruling out that there's something structurally wrong, what else do you look at to help make this determination?
So the second part of the assessment then is the rule in part. It's the part where we confirm that they actually have a neuroplastic condition. And we do that by the characteristics of the pain and this other part that we'll talk briefly about today, hopefully, that I call provocative testing.
Provocative testing. That is a mysterious, enticing term. So what, you're talking about two different prongs. On one side, you're ruling out that it's being caused by the body, some sort of structural physical problem. And on the other hand, you're ruling in the idea that it's being caused by the brain. And that gives you a really comprehensive overview of the entire situation.
Yes, and this ruling in component is very strong evidence. You know, if you have abnormalities on an MRI, you can say, well, maybe it's causing some pain, maybe it's not. But
right.
when you have the ruling in part, for example, when pain is inconsistent, that confirms that it's neuroplastic pain. Inconsistent meaning that it's there one day and it's gone the next, or it's on one side of the body in one day and then the next day it's on the other side,
mm-hmm.
or it goes away when you're on vacation.
Because that is not consistent with, like, structural findings.
Exactly. It's there in the morning and gone in the afternoon. If you have a broken arm, it doesn't act like that. And so when we get that history, which is extremely common, but most doctors aren't really looking for that carefully enough, in my opinion.
Mm.
But people can do that for themselves. You know, people can look at these criteria, the inconsistency and the variation, and they can see that, and then it becomes obvious.
So under this category of a rule in, what else do you look for other than inconsistency of symptoms?
Another category we look for is what I call functional. So a functional disorder means that it doesn't correspond to what would be seen in a physiologic or a structural type of disorder. For example, if someone has pain on the whole left side of their body, that's not a physiologic measure. There's no disorder that does that. That has to be the brain. If someone has nerve compression in their back that would cause pain shooting down their leg, which certainly can happen, it wouldn't be the whole leg, right? It would be just the outside of the leg or the back of the leg. But if it's the whole leg, then that's going to be the brain.
So you're talking about things that don't necessarily match what the pain would look like if it were a structural issue.
Exactly. Someone has on an MRI, it looks like the nerve is being pressed on the right side of their neck and they have pain on the left arm. Well, that doesn't fit.
So that sounds like that's something that would need a physician to help you make that determination. I think the idea of the inconsistent symptoms is something that a pain sufferer would be able to help determine on their own. What are some other rule-in criteria that pain patients would be able to discover on their own without the assistance of a physician, assuming they didn't have access to that?
Right. The third category is what we call triggered. So when pain is triggered by an innocuous stimulus, then that's got to be the brain. because if pain is being triggered by sound or light or the wind or weather even.
Yeah, I've seen people who have pain that's triggered by like barometric pressure. They're like, I could be locked in my basement and when the barometric pressure goes up, it affects my pain.
Right. And it turns out that research shows that weather doesn't cause pain. And research shows that sound and light don't cause pain. They don't trigger changes in the body. What they trigger is the neural circuits in the brain to activate pain. And that then becomes a very clear indicator of neuroplastic pain.
So you're talking about like learned associations where the brain creates an association between a certain stimulus and the onset of pain.
Exactly. And of course, when someone goes into a stressful situation and that causes pain, it becomes pretty darn obvious that it's a stress-related condition.
You know, it's really funny we're talking about these learned associations or these conditioned responses. Did you ever watch the show House?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So Hugh Laurie, you know, played this doctor who had a limp, 2004 to 2012. Every day he's on set, he's walking around with this cane and this limp. And the show ends. And he said, you know, I heard an interview with him and he said for 2 or 3 years after that show ended, every time I was doing any TV show or any movie, as soon as the director shouted action, I couldn't not walk with a limp, right? It had become an association in his brain between filming a show and having that limp, that kind of association became solidified in his brain.
Yeah, the power of the brain to create changes in our body is just unbelievable. I mean, that's how the brain works. When you touch a hot stove, it's not your finger causing pain. It's actually the brain. And so the severity of the pain is not an indicator of what's causing it, because the brain, in the absence of a structural injury, can cause as severe a pain as a kidney stone or childbirth.
So you're talking about these triggers. You're able to look at the triggers and help determine whether or not this is neuroplastic pain or physically caused pain by some of the triggers. And what are those triggers that you look for to make that determination?
Well, there's just so many. They can be time of day. They can be certain movements. They can be light, sound, smells, food. Barometric pressure, as you mentioned, weather changes. And it can also be the anticipation of those things. For example, I had a patient who had a lot of severe hand pain with typing, and it would get worse every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It would get better on the weekend when she wasn't typing. So it appeared to be structural. But when I asked if she had the pain any other time, she said, yes, I have it on Sunday evenings. And she hadn't been typing.
Interesting. So that kind of bleeds over a little bit to the inconsistent thing that you were talking about.
Right, but also the anticipation. And so her brain was anticipating going to work on Monday.
I see.
On Sunday evenings. And that was the clue. So that little fact, that one fact, just like in a detective story, broke the whole case open. And she did fine after that because we knew for certain the rule-in criteria is so powerful. She knew for certain that this was neuroplastic pain because there was no other reason, no other way to explain it, having pain on Sunday evening.
Got it. So you're looking for these different triggers, and you're also talking about even the anticipation of a trigger or some other stressful event. I've actually seen that a lot where if there is a certain trigger that could cause someone pain, even the anticipation of that trigger itself could bring the pain on. What about people who have triggers that do line up with the pain? For example, you know, if someone has pain that is correlated with, you know, the evening time or something, obviously that's not going to be a structural issue. But what if someone has pain that's correlated with walking? Or like you said, like wrist pain with typing, that is more of a physical trigger than a psychological one?
Yeah, it's a great question. And so the inconsistency or the functional part component of that might give us a clue. But this gets into the fourth category, which is provocative testing, right? So if someone has pain with bending over. One thing that I'm going to do with them is have them stand up, close their eyes, and imagine bending over. The brain uses imagination all the time. And imagining seeing a tree, the activity in the brain is kind of the same as actually seeing a tree.
Wow.
So when someone, right? So when someone imagines bending over, it activates the same neural circuits. And frequently, if someone imagines bending over, if they have an association between bending over and pain, they'll actually get the pain, or they might get some kind of fear or anxiety reaction. But when they get pain by imagining bending over, then we've just ruled out that it's a structural problem. And we've just ruled in that it's a neuroplastic problem.
That's really interesting. When you talk about imagining bending over or something like that, what you're doing is you're actually getting exposure to the activity, but in a safer way.
Exactly. And that really is an amazing thing. And it works so often. You can have people imagine typing, imagine sitting, imagine walking, imagine standing up, all those things. I do that every day with my patients. And it doesn't work every single time, but the majority of the time they do get some reaction and they get a low level of it. And then we kind of laugh and we say, look, that's your brain. That just proves it. And there's a relief at that point. And it's just a great way to rule in a neuroplastic problem.
So how would our listeners be able to use provocative testing to help further make that determination between, is there pain being caused by the brain or is there some sort of structural thing going on?
Yeah, it's not that hard. They can do this themselves. They can take the triggering situation and just put themselves in a quiet place and close their eyes and imagine whatever the trigger is. Imagine it as vividly as they can and just wait and just see if what kind of response they get. Another way to do it, which is really interesting, is to take an area on the body that is tender. So a lot of times people have tender points and when they push, they think, well, there must be something wrong physically because, you know, my muscles are tender or the joint is tender or whatever. And so in this case, what they can do is they can put their finger on the spot. First, they can push there to feel what it feels like to get the sensation when they're pressing firmly or lightly. And then they can put their finger there, don't press at all, close their eyes and imagine pressing. And again, I do this all the time with people. And when they get discomfort, usually it's a milder discomfort, but still any discomfort with imagined pressure is another way of provocative testing. And again, proof that this is neuroplastic pain.
I see. So it sounds like you use provocative testing. And on one hand, it's a diagnostic tool to help make this determination, but there's also a treatment component to it because once they realize that there's nothing wrong with their body, it's easier for them to attend to the sensation without fear.
Exactly. Usually it's a milder sensation, number one. Number two, they know for certain that it's not their body. They know for certain it's their brain, so it gives them more confidence. And then they can observe that, and usually it goes away in a very short time. And then they can repeat the exercise. So then they can repeat imagining the trigger or imagining the pressure. And usually after one or two times of doing that, they can imagine it without any discomfort, which is changing the neural circuits in their brain.
Wow. So you've talked about all of the different ways that you use to help people determine whether or not the pain is being caused by their brain or if there's a structural issue. How many physicians are there out there that do what you do?
Very few. And it's sad because people deserve, I don't know how to say this in any other way, but people deserve better from their doctors. Almost every patient that I've seen in the last literally 18 years of doing this work has said to me at some point, Dr. Schubiner, how come my doctors haven't told me about this? How come other doctors don't know about this?
Yeah. It's kind of hard to answer that diplomatically. It sounds like one of the things that you're doing is helping patients unlearn some of the previous diagnoses that they've been given by other doctors.
Yes, absolutely. And many doctors are, you know, they're really good. Some of the best ones say, you know, I just don't know. At least that's not giving a false diagnosis or, or, or giving them, scaring them with, you know, that their back is so damaged or they're crippled or they're never going to get better, those kinds of things. That's what doctors have been trained as. So they don't, you know, this information, a lot of it comes from emerging neuroscience that, you know, really isn't taught in medical schools.
And that's been one of my fears, is that as this gets bigger and bigger and more people learn about it and more therapists are treating it, that there's just not going to be enough physicians to diagnose this. And so I'm really excited that you are going to be doing an inaugural training this upcoming March to teach and train physicians and certify physicians in diagnosing neuroplastic pain.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. It's going to be a, you know, relatively short course, 8 hours, but people who've had medical training, I think, can easily learn these techniques and this method within that amount of time. And it's going to be a, you know, live virtual course, so people can take it anywhere, just depending on their time zone. You know, I'm really looking forward to that.
We need more physicians out there who are able to see patients and make that determination and understand your model and your approach. And so the fact that you're going to be holding this training is really exciting. And you're going to be giving CEs, or continuing education credits, as well, right?
Correct. Yep.
So for everyone out there, if you are a physician and you're interested in getting trained in this, if you know a physician, if you have a physician, we need as many of these doctors as possible who know Howard's approach and who are able to make this determination. And we're going to accumulate a centralized list of everyone who is Howard Schubiner approved. What if someone is not a physician and they want to attend, if they're a psychotherapist or a physical therapist?
Yeah, we're going to make it open. The beauty of doing virtual training is you can have, you know, relatively large numbers without needing a space for them. We're going to have continuing education credits for the other medical fields and therapy fields as well. So those people are going to be welcome.
So a couple of questions. First of all, when is this training?
Yeah, it's going to be March 19th and 20th, coming up this spring. It's going to be the afternoon, the Friday afternoon and the Saturday morning.
And where can people go to get details and sign up for it?
Sure. You simply go to my website, unlearnyourpain.com. There's a title that says virtual training. There's a link there. Click on the link and that takes you right to the sign up page.
Great. So go to unlearnyourpain.com and then just click on that link that says virtual training.
Yes, correct.
So we've been talking a lot about diagnosing and how to determine whether or not the pain is caused by your brain. Obviously, one of the things that people are really interested in is treatment. What do I do to overcome this pain? How do I get rid of these symptoms? And I mentioned at the top of the show that Curable, our podcast partner, is going to be starting a round of Curable groups. And I'm familiar with the groups. I've talked to people who've been in the groups, but I've actually never been in a Curable group myself. I know that you participate in the Curable groups as one of the physicians. So I was hoping you can talk a little bit about your experience with that, what your role is, and your feeling of the benefits of the group in general.
Sure. The groups last for 12 weeks. They have a facilitator. I think they have up to 12 people in them. And these people get a lot out of it. They really bond with each other. They get support from each other. They learn. They're going through all the material on the Curable app together. And what I do is I do one time during that 12-week. I have a two-hour live, you know, virtual session with them and answer their questions. And other physicians are involved in that as well. Lisa Batson, John Strax, Dave Clark. So they get they get that kind of attention in addition to the group from these physicians.
Do you ever help patients in the group make the determination over whether their own symptoms? I mean, obviously, you know, it's a group setting. You're not going to do like a full on consultation or exam, but do you help people make the determination of whether their pain is being caused by their brain?
I do. I do that all the time. It's kind of like I can't help myself.
Yeah.
You know, as you said at the top of the podcast, it's the foundation for people getting better, is knowing what they have and what they don't have.
Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us today, Howard. You're actually the first guest we've ever had on the Tell Me About Your Pain podcast. So I appreciate you joining.
Well, it's an honor. It's a privilege to be in Alan's shoes. You know, he does a great job. He's always got some, you know, funny little anecdotes to tell. So
yeah, that's
really
true.
It's really fun to listen to.
Yeah. No, he is great. I mean, you know, he didn't develop a protocol for how to help people determine whether or not the pain is being caused by their brain or not. But, you know, he's got some other positive traits.
Yeah, we can't all win the Nobel Prize. You know?
What a great way to go out. A little Nobel Prize plug. Thanks again for joining. This was really great. This is really fun. And we'll talk soon.
Thanks so much, Alan. Take care.
So thank you all for listening. I'd like to thank my guest, Howard Schubiner. And again, if you're a physician interested in learning how to assess and diagnose neuroplastic pain, you'll be officially certified by Howard Schubiner. There's going to be a central list where patients could go to find you. That training is on March 19th and 20th. You could go to unlearnyourpain.com and click on the link under virtual training. Also, I'd like to thank Curable, our podcast partners. Remember to check out curablegroups.com and RSVP for that great event on January 6th. Finally, I'd like to thank our amazing producer, Lori Poliski. I'll see you all next time.